I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. There's much politically to discuss, what with the federal election campaign. BC Premier Christy Clark in office a couple of weeks now, a provincial NDP leadership race, and yesterday the arrival to the provincial political scene of John Cummins, a former Delta MP. Mike Gagan joins me now to sort it all out and give us his take. The political consultant is a longtime political observer and commentator here in BC and nationally. His website is at bclobbyist.com. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Mike Gagan. Good morning, Mr. Gagan.
Good morning, and thanks for having me back.
Thanks for joining us. To the federal election first, Elizabeth May, she's apparently been shut out of the leaders' debate. What do you make of that, and do you think she should be included?
Well, you know, this was something that was a major issue in, the last election as well. I mean, the media look at it and go, well, you haven't elected a single MLA. The Green Party looks at it and goes, we've got candidates right across Canada, unlike the Bloc Québécois. We've taken, in terms of overall votes, almost as much as the Bloc Québécois. We should be let in. I guess it just depends on how you want to slice it and dice it. I mean, I think it's a situation where they either have to clearly establish a rule that it's only elected if you've managed to elect MPs, you get a leadership debate. Maybe they need to make the rule you have to run candidates in every riding and you have to have at least one incumbent MP. I don't know. I suspect, though, that there will be sufficient pressure, as there was last time, that she'll be let into the debates.
Yeah. Is this a campaign you think that people are interested in?
I think it's kind of hard to say. I think it's a campaign where it's been difficult in terms of attracting younger voters. I think that's why you've seen a lot of attention paid to seniors issues in this campaign, because although demographically there are still a fair number of young people in this country, they don't vote. So what is happening is a lot of the concerns of younger people, I mean, are not being focused on by the major political parties. They're, in a sense, younger people are politically cutting their own throats, because if they don't vote, their issues don't get addressed.
Yeah. Now, it's early days in the campaign, and usually our interest generally goes up, I guess, after after the middle of the campaign, the second half of the campaign, after the debates and the sort. But this election really doesn't seem to be interesting a lot of people, does it?
Well, no, because the only thing that seems to have emerged is, well, you know, you can't, the old line about you can't trust the Conservatives with a majority,
yeah,
versus, well, you can't trust giving the Conservatives a minority because there's nothing stopping the Liberals, the NDP and the Bloc Québécois from forming a coalition government. And so it's one of those situations where one of two outcomes is going to happen. Either there's going to be another Conservative minority government, unless the opposition parties after the election say, no, we've had enough of that, we're going to form a coalition, or conversely, the Conservatives will pull off a majority win. So really, it's more about what the results are. The content of the election seems to be what the outcome will be.
And BC remains a pivotal part in that, right?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, the whole Tory strategy is, you know, they hope to pick up a few seats in Newfoundland now that Danny Williams has left. And before Williams left, they did kind of do a bit of rapprochement between him. And even though he had been a Conservative premier, he had issued a fatwa against Harper, and as a result, the Conservatives were shut out of Newfoundland, where historically they've always won a few ridings in Newfoundland. So they're hoping to pick up a few ridings in Atlantic Canada. They're hoping to pick up a few ridings in suburban Toronto. They would like to pick up a few more ridings in Quebec, but, you know, the popularity of the Bloc Québécois there and Gilles Doucette makes that difficult. And then, so the key battleground province is British Columbia, and certainly the riding I'm living in, Esquimalt Juan de Fuca, now that the incumbent Keith Martin isn't running again, and he only won last time by, I think, 68 votes or something like that, I think there's an extremely good chance you'll see Troy D'Souza of the Conservatives elected in this riding. So if they pick up enough of those ridings, they could squeak out a majority.
Now, your riding, which you just mentioned, is one to watch. In terms of the island, are there other seats that could that should be that we should watch, I suppose, on the 2nd of May?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a real push on John Corey a little bit up island. I mean, the interesting thing is that provincially, the BC Liberals seem to have written off a lot of the island, and yet federally, you've got a lot of people who vote Conservative, and I think that's a message that if you actually pay attention to the island, they don't automatically all vote NDP. So, you know, kudos to the Conservatives for, you know, having not written the island off and still, and as a result, still being very competitive in a number of different ridings.
Elizabeth May's running. Where is she running again?
She's running in Saanich and Gulf Islands. Gary Lunn, who's a Conservative cabinet minister, is the incumbent MP.
And do you think she has a chance there?
I don't even think she'll come in second. I mean, I would be shocked if she came in higher than third.
Really?
You know, and it's a thing where she's run in Atlantic Canada, she's run in Ontario, she's going to run in this riding. I mean, unless there was some sort of system of proportional representation, the Greens are never going to, as far as I can see, ever going to elect anyone, and certainly not Elizabeth May, to be an MP. And at a certain point, you know, you have to, I guess, take the message of the electorate, which is, you know, there isn't a significant percentage of people who are willing to vote Green. I mean, I think it's something like 6%.
That's why she'll need that debate, won't she?
Well, yeah, she'll need that debate, and even under most proportional representation systems, you have to have at least 5% of the vote. So, I mean, even under a PR system, you know, the Greens would have very little representation in a House of Commons under such a system.
Is this Michael Ignatieff's last stand? Does he have to win a minority at least to remain leader?
Yes, it is. I mean, the only way I think he stays on is if he decides to do a Trudeau. I mean, remember when Trudeau said there won't be wage and price controls,
right,
and then he introduced wage and price controls?
Yeah.
You know, he's categorically denied that there will be a coalition. So, you know, but if he's facing that versus, well, gee, you know, I get to be prime minister versus resigning, who knows, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a situation where unless the Conservatives get a majority, I think you'll see all the leaders replaced. I think Harper's gone if he doesn't get a majority. I think he'll eventually, you know, I think they'll look for new leadership. Ignatieff will be gone. Jack Layton, particularly, you know, he's run a number of times. He's got some health issues, prostate cancer, and I think he's had some issues with his hip.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be gone. Elizabeth May, it's like how many times you get rejected by the voters before you get the message, like you're not the one who's going to lead them to the promised land. And, you know, as was put so eloquently, I mean, Gilles Duceppe is now the senior statesman in Ottawa.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he's well regarded, I have to say, by a lot of people who would never vote for him because, you know, they find separatism abhorrent, but as a politician and as an individual, they respect the guy. But as someone put it so eloquently, some, you know, even separatists have to go home sometime.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, Harper has said that we should hate the idea of a coalition, especially one that included Gilles Duceppe. But do you think that that's just the politicking, or? At the end of the day, if the Liberals and the NDP and the Bloc coalesce, will that be a bad thing, do you think?
Well, I think... sorry, I'm just finding a bit of a cold, but
yeah.
I think it's a situation where it would certainly be replete with irony if you had, you know, separatists either formally or tacitly as part of a coalition government, you know, governing all of Canada. I think it would sort of undermine the whole, in a sense, the whole core measure of the Bloc. But I guess the problematic thing is what would the Bloc want in return for their support, right? Like, you know, we've had this longstanding tradition of checkbook federalism when it comes to Quebec, right?
Yeah.
What do we need to pay you in order to keep you mollified, right? So what would the Bloc Québécois want in terms of transfer of powers or additional transfers of money to Quebec in order to keep them propping up Michael Ignatieff and Michael Ignatieff / Jack Layton government. It's kind of a depressing prospect, because I think, you know, part of the malaise of Quebec is the fact that, you know, it's such a high tax, high regulated environment, even by Canadian standards, and of course all this talk of separatism has driven so much in the way of talent and investment out of the province that, I mean, you know, Quebec would have been years ahead of where it is now if not for that.
Let's move provincially for just a sec. Christy Clark, as I said, has been premier for a couple of weeks now. How do you think she's done so far?
I think she's done brilliantly. I mean, as I said on a national TV news network, you know, because people were concerned about the fact that she had only had one sitting caucus member officially endorse her before she won, and I said, you know, and they were all worried that she wasn't going to do well in terms of winning them over, and I said, you know, people underestimate her ability to charm, and I think coming out of the gate with the announcement regarding minimum wage, which had started to become a real sore point, but I mean, it clearly distinguished that she was different from Gordon Campbell. And like I say, I think the fact that she announced that, you know, cabinet ministers are going to be responsible once again for their portfolios, they're not just going to be title holders. Again, I think that won over a lot of members of cabinet, and I think this charm offensive has, for the time being at least, won over a lot of the press gallery, and to the result that, you know, the NDP leadership race is almost disappeared from you know, the media.
Yeah. Now, this HST referendum, it's still, I guess, on June 24th.
Yeah.
It'll be a mail-in ballot. What do you make of that?
I think it's a thing where they wanted to, one, reduce the cost of it, and two, make it as accessible as possible. I think if they had had a standalone thing where you have to, you know, go down, you know, the traditional model, you go down to the school and mark your ballot, I think they would have seen a very low voter turnout. I think there would have been people accusing them of you know, trying to rig things in favor of supporting the HST. I think with a mail-in ballot, it sort of minimizes the effort people have to go to in order to say yay or nay.
And do you think it passes at all in terms of that the tax will be with us after the referendum?
I think if they wanted to win this, they'd have to do something like announce that they're cutting the HST to 10%.
Yeah.
And so your choice is between a 10% HST versus going back to a 7% GST and a 7% provincial sales tax and a 5% GST. If it was basically 10 versus 12, I mean, of course, factoring in that an HST has a wider base than a provincial sales tax, but I think at that point people would go, oh, wait a sec, maybe an HST is better. It's one tax versus two, and the combined rate is less. But I think, you know, 12 versus 7 and 5, 7 and 5 will win.
Yeah. Have you seen the Christy Crunch ad, the NDP put
up? Yes, I have. That's quite funny. I mean, obviously someone over at the NDP has been watching, you know, The Daily Show and realizing that if you want to engage the political left, that, you know, using a bit of humor is actually quite effective.
I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and that's the thing is that the NDP have been so serious and so, like, it's just like, oh, my God, like, really, people? Does it have to be that somber all the time? Like, you know, and I look at the Jack Layton ads federally, and it's like, you know, here's young people, and here's old people, and here's me being concerned about it. It's like, that's classic old-school NDP advertising.
Yeah.
Using humor like that, I mean, that actually gets to people, because regardless of whether or not you agree with the message, you've amused people, and you've made that message sink in, right?
Yeah.
And that those kind of cheeky, funny ads, I think they're brilliant, and I think all political parties should be doing more of that.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like an attack ad, does it?
No, I mean, it actually very much is, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, my response to was that, you know, are you cereal? You know, Adrian Dix is a lot more like Glenn Clark than Christy Clark is like Gordon Campbell. But, you know, that was my little witticism back, right, on Twitter. But, I think it was a brilliant ad, and I think other political parties should take note and do likewise.
I mentioned off the top, John Cummins had his big press conference yesterday.
Yep.
Is he a threat to the coalition that's the BC Liberal Party?
Well, he's a threat. I don't think he's a threat in terms of getting any MLAs to cross the floor. You're not going to see Kevin Falcon, you know, who's now the deputy premier. You're not going to see him or go over to the floor. But where it's a threat, I mean, you just by running a full slate of candidates and having a bit of profile, that would take, I mean, even if it was like 8, 9, 10% of the vote, that would be more than enough to allow the NDP to come up the middle. And so let's assume that someone like Adrian Dix, who's been described as, you know, Glenn Clark without the charm, right?
Yeah.
You know, is leader of the NDP. Well, now he's the premier. So I think it's because of the way the BC Conservatives have gotten serious about organizing that you will see a provincial election this fall. So we'll have this federal election, the June referendum, and a fall provincial election, because the last thing the Liberals want to do is wait another couple of years, give the Conservatives another couple of years to build their profile, candidates, credibility, fundraise, etc., and then have a split vote and, you know, end up with an NDP government.
And then we have municipal elections in November as well, don't we?
Yeah, it's going to be crowded. I suspect the provincial election will be before the municipal elections. I think it'll be more like September, October.
And so does that mean that Christy Clark runs in a by-election before then?
Yes. I don't think she's going to wait till the general election to get in a by-election. She wants to get back into the legislature as soon as possible. I mean, this is a woman that, I mean, when we were both 18, we went to university model parliament together and stuff like that, and she was active in student politics at SFU when I was active at UVic, and so I've known Christy for many, many years, and you know, she lives and breathes politics, and knowing her, she's itching to get back into the legislature. And she's not afraid to be in the legislature. She's not going to be the kind of premier where, you know, you see very few sittings of the legislature. She's a person who is not afraid to mix it up.
Well, when you were growing up together, when you went to school together,
you're making it sound like we lived together. No.
No, but when you were at these model parliaments and the sort, and you saw each other, did you think one day that person could be premier?
You know, it's funny because the other person that was there was Adrian Dix, right?
Really?
So there's two alumni, and that's the thing is that you could see these people as they did in university model parliament, you know, a quarter of a century ago. You could find them facing off across each other across the aisle in the very same building because they used to do the university model parliament in the BC legislature at Christmas time. But in answer to your question, when I looked at Christy, I knew that she definitely was going to be a politician. Like, I assumed it would be federal politics, like that she'd be a federal Liberal.
Right.
So I sort of saw her as, oh, you know, she could be like another Iona Campanola or something like that. So, but, you know, because back in those days, there was no provincial Liberal Party, right? I mean, it wasn't until Gordon Wilson came out and won that debate that you saw the Liberals kind of emerge as the Socreds were collapsing. It's a turn of events. I mean, in fact, it was Gordon Wilson that first hired Christy Clark as a research officer and got her first gig at the legislature. So a lot of history there.
Mike, these are interesting times. I appreciate your time this morning.
Well, thank you.
Mike's website is at bclobbyist.com. Michael Gagan on the line from Victoria this morning in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.